feet and daylight unto my path. And a light unto, a light unto my path, my path.
Welcome to Searchlight, a survey through Scripture with Pastor John Corson. It is our desire to bring you a systematic study of the entire Bible, chapter by chapter, book by book. In our study in 1 Samuel, we have been looking at the installation of the first king of Israel, Saul. Now, the reason that God gave Israel a king was because they insisted on it. They insisted on a king even after God told them it would not be best for them. In our previous study, we saw Samuel telling the people that even though they had rejected God by asking for a king, God would not forsake them. And in addition to that, Samuel would continue to pray for them, for Samuel was a man of prayer. John talked to us about prayer and gave us four important points about prayer. First, prayerlessness is an indicator of selfishness. Second, prayer is the proof of love, and love is the product of prayer. Third, prayer is the gauge of humility. Fourth, prayer is the priority in true ministry. As we now join Pastor John, he is continuing to talk about the importance of prayer in our lives.
Finally, fifthly, intercession is the common denominator of all great godly men and great godly women. Whether it's in the Bible or in biographies, you'll notice something. The people that have really left a mark for the Lord and made a difference in this world, inevitably, without exception, are men or women who were given to intercession. Interceding, that's praying for others. See, Abraham was the friend of God, wasn't he? But what did he do? He interceded for Sodom, a sick, sinful, sexually perverted city. But he prayed, oh, if there's 50 righteous, Lord, if there's 40 righteous, if there's 30 righteous, you know the story. He was interceding for what? For Sodom. A friend of God will also be a man of intercession for the cities that surround him, for the cities that surround her. Abraham, a friend of God. Elijah was a man who moved in the miraculous, wasn't he? And God took care of him miraculously. But what did he do? He prayed for the people of Israel with passion, putting his head between his legs and praying that there might be, as he's bowed in that birthing position, that God would reign, bless the people of Israel. Elijah was a man of like passions, we are told, like you and me, but he prayed, James says. Esther, who was in love with the king, if you would, that is, she was the bride of the king. She sat in oils and perfumes for a year to get ready to be presented to the king. But what did she do? She interceded for the people, for the Jews. For such a time as this, she came into the kingdom and she approached the king, risking her own life, if you know the story, risking everything to intercede for the people. She could have just lived in her splendid palace and never revealed her true identity, or risked her life in interceding for the Jews. Read Esther if you don't know the story. But she did it because, you see, the lover of the king, our king, will always be one who's interceding. Whether it's Abraham or Elijah, whether it's Moses or Esther or David, or on the stories go. You know, a few years ago, I was reading an article that really, really intrigued me. At St. Catherine's Monastery, there at the foot of Mount Sinai, where the law was given, a monastery has existed for centuries. And they discovered a couple of caskets. And the caskets were from the 7th century. And they pulled them up because it was an archaeological find and historical thing. And the reason that they were so interesting is because these 7th century caskets were chained together. And so, seeing the chain, not only chaining the two caskets, but going into each one, they carefully opened the caskets up. And in the casket, the one casket, they found a scroll. And the scroll explained the story of why these caskets were chained together in that way. You see, when they opened the lids, the chain was actually tied around the wrist of each man that was in the casket and went through the casket to the other one. And the scroll said that these monks were in silence for 40 years, living in isolation in two adjoining cells, small little rooms, never speaking a word and never leaving those cells by choice. Not jail cells, they're monk cells. They chose to be there. And they gave themselves to one thing, intercessory prayer. They were chained on their wrists with the chain going through the wall. The one guy in his one cell had a chain around his wrist, and through the wall the chain went around the wrist of his monk mate. Now, they never talked. They didn't see each other for 40 years. There's a wall between the two. They're in the cell. Food is brought in. They give themselves to prayer. And what would happen is when one would begin to grow sleepy and feel as though he could fight the sleep off no longer and had to rest, he would yank the chain. And the other guy, if he was drowsy, would awaken and realize it's my turn to pray. And he would pray for as long as he could until he could no longer fight the sleep off. Then he would yank the chain. And the other guy in the other cell, the other room, would then awaken and pray. And they went back and forth this way for 40 years. So when they died, they were buried in that manner, their wrists chained together. And the scroll was there to tell the story, discovered only about 35 years ago or so. And when I read that, clipped that, saved that article, I thought, man, this gives a whole new meaning to a prayer chain. I mean, it really does, doesn't it? I mean, I know that's funny, but it really does. I thought, man, these guys really knew what it means to be in a prayer chain. I mean, they really did. Guys that were given to that, and I thought, my goodness, oh Lord, how little I know of that kind of intercessory prayer where I'm really being yanked, Lord, by my brother or the condition of another or by your spirit to wake up and to pray. But Samuel was a man who's recorded in the Bible who goes down in the history of eternity as a grand man for one reason primarily. He was a man who was given to prayer. And he says, you're asking me to pray? God forbid that I would sin in ceasing to pray for you, even though you've rebelled against me. Perish the thought. Can I ask you tonight, can I ask us tonight, what does our church look like in God's sight? Maybe you've been a Christian for 10 years. Honestly, where are you at in this arena of intercession? I wonder how many intercessors are sitting here, not known to us, but revealed in heaven. I wonder how many feel the tug, the yank of the Holy Spirit, and pray for others. I honestly, truly, deeply, sincerely believe that the ministry that we enjoy here is the result of God's grace as people have been called to pray. And I don't even necessarily know who they might be. But people who are yanked by the Spirit and pray consistently and seriously and faithfully like Samuel. Samuel said, I'm not going to sin against the Lord in ceasing to pray. And he did. Well, Saul reigned 1 year. And when he reigned 2 years over Israel, Saul chose him 3,000 men of Israel, whereof 2,000 were with Saul in Michmash and in Mount Bethel. Now 1,000 men were with Jonathan. Jonathan, a great guy. I like that name. Jonathan. That's my name, you see. 1,000 men were with Jonathan, his son. 2,000 were with Saul, the pops, the dad. And Jonathan, verse 3, with his smaller army, smote the garrison of the Philistines that was in Geba. And Saul blew the trumpet. All Israel heard, verse 4, that Saul had smitten a garrison of Philistines. Interesting, Jonathan slew the Philistines, and Saul blew the trumpet and let it be known, or tried to make it appear as though it was Saul's victory. Now we're seeing the cracks in Saul's character. He was a proud man. He wanted people to think more highly of him than he deserved to be thought of. Jonathan slew the Philistines, but Saul blew the trumpet and let people think that it was his military prowess and his bravery. A big mistake. Jonathan slew him, but Saul took the credit for it. Pride. Pride is being seen. It's true that the limb that bears the most fruit always hangs the lowest. If you're truly fruitful, there's not going to be a lifting up, but a bending down. The limb that bears the most fruit always hangs the lowest. Saul was not that way. He wasn't hanging low. He was standing tall and blowing the horn. It reminds me of that story, the drought that took place there in the Midwest. And the pond that the frog was living in was going dry. And the frog was worried because, you see, if the frog went dry, he would soon die. So as the pond was getting smaller and smaller, he saw his buddies, the ducks, two ducks, Danny and Donald, getting ready to split and fly away and find some fresh supply of water. And on that day when they were about to fly away, the frog said, hey, you guys, you can't leave me here. I'll die. Here's my plan, the frog said. If you two ducks wouldn't mind, this will really fit the bill. Take a stick and put it between your bills, and I'm going to hang on with my mouth. And then you guys fly, and I'll hang on to the stick suspended there from the stick while you hold each end of the stick with your mouth, and you fly away to the new pond, and hey, we'll all make it safely. What do you say? The duck said, okay, we'll do it. They got the stick. The frog with his mouth opened up and wrapped his tongue there roundabout, and the ducks began to fly. looking for a new pond, a new source of water. And as they were making their way over a field, a farmer in the field looked up and saw the two ducks with the frog suspended from the stick. And he said, whoa. He says, by cracky? He says, that's really something. What an ingenious plan. Who thought of that? And the frog said, I. And he croaked. Fell down. Why? Because I. And he opened his mouth, and that was it. The point is, that's what happens to you and me. I, me, boom, croak, you see. Let that be a lesson, that true story. So Saul blows the trumpet. Look what I've done. No, you didn't, Saul. Jonathan slew the garrison. Why are you taking the credit? Give credit where credit is due. Saul. It gets worse. The Philistines, verse 5, gathered themselves together to fight with Israel, 30,000 chariots, 6,000 horsemen, and people as the sand on the seashore in multitude. They came up and pitched in Michmash, eastward from Beth-Haven. Verse 6, when the men of Israel saw the people were in a strait, for the people were distressed. The people hid in caves, in thickets, in rocks, in high places, in pits. And some of the Hebrews went over Jordan to the land of Gad and Gilead. They split. As for Saul, he was yet in Gilgal. And the people following him were trembling. They were afraid. He tarried 7 days. Saul was there for 7 days with the people that were fearfully following him. He waited 7 days according to the set time, verse 8, that Samuel had requested or demanded. But Samuel didn't come to Gilgal, and the people were scattered from him. They were leaving. Saul said, okay, bring me a burnt offering and peace offerings. And he offered the burnt offering. He was now fulfilling the role of a priest. He was called to be a king. Only one would be allowed to be king and priest simultaneously, and that is who? Jesus Christ, the King of Kings, the great high priest. But Saul is panicking because Samuel, the prophet, who could function in that way, didn't show up. Samuel said, wait before you get the people engaged in a battle against the Philistines. Wait for 7 days. 7 days had come. 7 days had almost gone. And Samuel had not yet showed up. Saul said, I've got to do something. The people are scattering. They're leaving. I got to do something. So Samuel himself, pardon me, Saul himself said, bring me a burnt offering and I'll offer it on behalf of the people so that we can now get engaged in the battle. It came to pass, verse 10, as soon as he had made an end of offering the burnt offering, behold, Samuel came. Samuel showed up. Saul went out to meet him. Samuel said, what hast thou done? Saul said, well, I saw the people were scattered from me. They were leaving. They were freaking out. And you did not come within the days appointed. And the Philistines are getting ready for battle. They're gathered together at Michmash. Therefore, said I, the Philistines will come down upon me to Gilgal. And I have not made supplication or offering, if you would, to the Lord. So I forced myself to do this. I forced myself to offer this burnt offering. Samuel said, Saul, thou hast done foolishly. Thou hast not kept the commandment of the Lord thy God, which he commanded thee. For now would the Lord have established thy kingdom. God would have established you in this role of being king. But the kingdom now, verse 14, shall not continue. The Lord hath sought him a man after his own heart. and the Lord hath commanded him to be captain over his people, because thou hast not kept that which the Lord commanded thee. And the man that Samuel is referring to would be David. Now listen carefully. This is huge. I'm almost through. We're almost done. But give me your attention, please. Because on the surface, this doesn't appear to be such a bad thing, really. I mean, Saul is there. He waits 7 days for Samuel to show up. The Philistines are going to attack. The offering has to be made. And so Saul steps up and steps in and says, I'll do it. And right when he was done, Samuel shows up. This is the way of God. So often, the Lord waits till the last second to step up, to step in. We wait and we wait and we wait and we say, I can't wait anymore. Something's got to get done. So like Saul, we act foolishly. I'm telling you, this is a story that will save you much heartbreak. It will save us much anguish. Wait. Don't panic. God loves to wait until the last second to step in. Why? Is it because he's teasing me? No. It's not because he's teasing me. It's he's testing me. He's testing me in this way. He takes me right down to the wire, not to tease, but to test in order to train. To train me that I might have ultimately endurance. What does James 1 say? Count it all joy when you fall into various trials, knowing this, the testing of your faith works what? Patience. Let patience have its perfect work, that you may be entire and complete, lacking nothing. Let patience produce in you, as another translation puts it, endurance. That you may be entire and complete, lacking nothing. Endurance is the key. Listen, we are in this Christian race. It's not a sprint, as you know. It's a marathon. We're in it for the long haul. And God knows that I desperately need endurance. And he says, the only way that you're going to get endurance, John, is if you go through testings that will force you to wait on me, that you might then have endurance and not panic, not run off the track, not throw in the towel, not freak out emotionally. I want you to wait. I will show up at the last minute frequently, in the last second, but it's going to produce in you endurance. Listen, Charles Haddon Spurgeon said, the snails made it safely to the ark because they had endurance. You might be a snail. I might be a slug. We might move very slowly and leave a silver trail behind us that's gooey. But we will make it to the ark if we have endurance.
Endurance is not something that we naturally strive to obtain. It fights against our flesh and goes against our fast-paced culture. But God knows that we need endurance, and he will be faithful to allow us to be in tests that build our endurance. Please join us on our next program as John concludes this study through 1 Samuel chapter 13.
This teaching is also available on the Searchlight website at johncorson.com. You will also find on the website Pastor John's books and other Bible study resources. Again, the address of the website is johncorson.com. That's johncorson.com.
We would like to remind you that on the Searchlight website, you can find Pastor John's teachings through the entire Bible. You can listen to the audio or watch the video of any of these teachings from the website at any time for no charge. The Searchlight website address is johncorson.com.
Searchlight is a listener-supported ministry. We appreciate your prayers and support. May the Lord richly bless you.